I think it's really feels like it's going to be down to two individuals. So anything can happen.
What will a Trump-Kim summit come down to? It's Friday, April 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of our program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, relief organizations scramble to prepare Rohingya camps for monsoon season. The former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says China is America's biggest foreign policy challenge. And we visit a joint Chinese-Cambodian TV station. That's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in says that North Korea is not imposing conditions on upcoming summits with him and U.S. President Donald Trump over banning nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. Moon told corporate executives in Seoul Thursday that they have not attached any conditions that the U.S. cannot accept, such as the withdrawal of American troops from South Korea. He added that all the North Koreans are talking about is the end of hostile policies against Pyongyang, followed by a guarantee of security. Moon said that he did not think that denuclearization has different meanings for South or North Korea. He said the North is expressing a will for a complete denuclearization. The South Korean president said dialogue between the two Koreas must continue after the April 27th summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and the North Korean U.S. summit, for which no date has been set. That inter-Korean summit on April 27th will take place in the uninhabited village of Panmunjom, an inside intense and highly fortified demilitarized zone that separates the communist North and the democratic South. VOA's Brian Padden tells us this historical site, where the Korean War armistice was signed in 1953, has since been a key point of contact for cross-border communication and a major tourist destination.
The Panmunjom meeting site, located on the border between North and South Korea, was first established in 1951 to negotiate the truce to end the Korean War. The talks and the fighting went on for three more years before an armistice was signed. Today, Panmunjom has come to symbolize the ongoing division of the Korean Peninsula. It is the only site along the heavily fortified 250-kilometer-long demilitarized zone border where soldiers from both the North and South are in close proximity to each other. No civilians live in the cluster of blue huts within the joint security area that is controlled by both North Korea and the UN command established during the Korean War.
The whole job of the Joint Security Battalion here, the ROK soldiers and the U.S. soldiers that you see out here today, is to provide security to enable dialogue between the two talks.
Panmunjom has been the site of numerous cross-border talks, including recent planning sessions for the upcoming inter-Korean summit. The meeting between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place in the Peace House, a conference building on the South Korean side of the DMZ. It will be the first time a North Korean leader has visited South Korea.
They're still working out exactly the series of events, so how the two leaders will egress into the building, and then, of course, they'll have staffers that come with them. So that's still all being negotiated.
While the border region is controlled to maintain a tense peace, there have been isolated incidents of conflict and violence over the years. In November, security cameras in the DMZ recorded the North Korean military shooting one of its own soldiers as he raced across the border to defect to the south. The joint security area is also a major tourist destination where over 100,000 people visited from the south in 2017, and nearly 30,000 visited the site from the north. One of the main attractions is what is often called the propaganda village on the north side of the DMZ. A group of brightly colored buildings that South Korea says is uninhabited and was built to produce the illusion of prosperity in the impoverished North. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Meanwhile, the head of a Nobel Peace Prize-winning anti-nuclear campaign group said Thursday it would support possible nuclear talks between the United States and North Korea, despite condemning bullying tactics and threats that caused a surging tension between the two states. Beatrice Finn, the executive director of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, said that U.S. President Donald Trump has been intensifying tensions with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un since each of his hostile tweets has prompted a similar reaction from Pyongyang.
And then Trump tweets, "My button is bigger than yours," and you're like, okay, I see it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels a bit like a measuring contest. And a safety blanket and, you know, show how tough you are, which is extremely concerning.
Finn credits South Korea for encouraging diplomacy between the two countries, especially by inviting North Korea to this year's Winter Olympics.
And what actually worked this time was very skillful diplomacy by South Korea, using the Olympics, for example, being very careful at not coming across as threatful, instead opening up for dialogue, inviting them to come to the games and have a lot of these kind of initial conversations, stroking egos on both sides.
Finn said that she doubts that other nations would be able to influence Trump and Kim during the nuclear talks.
So I think we just have to wait and see. Obviously, it's going to be very hard for the rest of the world to actually influence this meeting. I think it's really feels like it's going to be down to two individuals. So anything can happen.
Finn added that pulling out of the Iran nuclear agreement would be a security concern, not only for nuclear non-proliferation, but also for the Korean negotiations, because she said it would show the United States cannot be trusted to abide by its agreements. Finn was speaking ahead of a two-week conference on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty that begins on Monday. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S.-Japan trade differences remain after Trump-Abe talks. South Korea says North not imposing conditions on nuclear talks. Citing Rohingya massacre, Myanmar Army chief urges soldiers to obey law. Pakistan says fencing of the border with Afghanistan is on the fast track. And India moves to fix inexplicable cash shortages. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. We hope you're enjoying this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and this is VOA Asia. Aid agencies are racing to strengthen fragile shelters in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, as monsoons are forecast to hit overcrowded Rohingya refugee settlements. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the International Organization for Migration is building bridges, access roads, steps, drains, and slope protection to enable communities to better weather the monsoon.
More than 700,000 Rohingya refugees who fled violence and persecution in Myanmar since August are living in squalid, cramped camps in Cox's Bazar. They and other residents in the area are threatened by potentially devastating floods and landslides from the impending monsoons. The International Organization for Migration is one of many agencies stepping up work to prepare the camps and strengthen flimsy shelters so they are not washed away during the heavy rains and cyclonic storms. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA conditions in the settlements are particularly problematic. He says the impact of so many people on this fragile environment is damaging, even when there is no rain.
You can imagine what we're expecting when hillsides can fall, people can go unreachable because there are no roads to get to them, bridges will be lost. So, of course, all we can do is prepare, and we want to make this clear to the international community that it isn't just IOM. Everybody is preparing for what could potentially impact almost 1 million people.
Millman says IOM is mainly engaged in building bridges, access roads, steps, drains, and slope protection work to enable communities to better weather the monsoon. He says IOM and partners are racing to upgrade shelters in Teknef, a southern sub-district of Cox's Bazar. He says more than 15,000 shelters housing nearly 80,000 people are at risk and in need of urgent improvement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We have this news from Asia. Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi arrived in Hanoi Thursday for a two-day official visit aimed at promoting relations between the two Southeast Asian nations. Suu Kyi had talks with Vietnam's prime minister, and the two leaders witnessed the signing of two memoranda of understanding for cooperation on telecommunication and information. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. This is VOA Asia. From the anticipated U.S.-North Korea summit to concerns of a trade war with China and others, the United States faces several foreign policy challenges, and a White House national security team is in transition. On this week's edition of Plugged In with Greta Van Susteren, several experts, including the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, retired Admiral Mike Mullen, discuss those challenges and what they mean for U.S. foreign policy going forward. Elizabeth Chernoff has more.
As a tit-for-tat trade spat between the United States and China continues, former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral Michael Mullen called Beijing a growing giant, telling VOA's Greta Van Susteren its growth is key to how the world is shaped.
How China grows and what our relationship is long-term is really critical. If it's constructive, if we can have a constructive relationship with them, then I think that's good for the world. If it's destructive, then I think it's really bad for the world. And that's what we've got to sort out. I actually believe that in this century, the most important bilateral relationship globally is the one between the U.S. and China.
The widely contested waters of the South China Sea remain in dispute, with countries like Japan and the Philippines looking to the U.S. for help in resisting maritime expansion by China. Daniel Twining, who previously advised Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on foreign policy, says Beijing's dominance in the region puts the world economy at risk.
China does want to go global. It wants to project out of Asia. It wants to wedge apart the U.S. and its allies over time, and we've got to be very mindful about that.
Joshua Walker, who heads global strategic initiatives at the Eurasia Group, says China's interests are both economic and military-driven.
If you control that sea lane, it basically breaks up the entire international liberal order that the United States set up after World War II. And what's interesting is U.S. strategy now is trying to link both India and Japan as kind of these main focal points in the Indo-Pacific and bring all of our allies together.
Some say China's economic rise is due in part to a broader leadership void on the world stage.
The people that are moving the needle right now, two of the people moving the needle are Xi Jinping and Putin, and they're the wrong guys as far as I'm concerned.
Last month, Chinese lawmakers voted to abolish presidential term limits, paving the way for President Xi to rule indefinitely. On the heels of his re-election, Russia's President Putin is set to stay in office for the next 6 years. Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, we visit a joint Chinese-Cambodian TV station in Phnom Penh. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
News alert from VOA Asia. A volcano in southern Japan erupted for the first time in 250 years on Thursday, spewing steam and ash hundreds of meters into the air. It was the first eruption of Mount Iyo since 1768, and officials warned large flying rocks could fall over a 3-kilometer radius. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. The blossoming friendship between China and the Cambodian government has become so close that a Chinese majority-owned Khmer language television station has built studios directly inside the Ministry of Interior in Phnom Penh. As David Boyle reports from the Cambodian capital, it's a peculiar joint venture that comes as Western-backed news outfits are being shut down or harassed ahead of a national election in July.
It's a typically frenetic morning in the studio of Cambodia's newest broadcaster, Nice TV, as reporters beam in the station's bread-and-butter stories, residential disputes and traffic jams. But there is nothing typical about the relationship between Nice TV, a private, majority Chinese-owned station, and Cambodia's Ministry of Interior, a minority shareholder in the venture. This relationship has seen the Khmer language station studios built right in the middle of Cambodia's Ministry of Interior, where its initial goal is to put a more friendly face on the news that better connects with audiences.
So the content is look more entertained, but some part, as I know, they will work to inform the people about the how to enforce the better public service. That the purpose to have the TV, because the ministry run and have big tasks to the people basically at the grassroots level.
To do this, Nice TV is harnessing the power of an app called Tutu Live that allows viewers to stream themselves live into the program. The station's COO, Jason Liu, was happy for us to film one of these broadcasts, but only agreed to speak for an audio-recorded interview himself. Liu told VOA the station was entertainment-focused, with an emphasis on user-generated content and engagement, rather than politics and conflict.
The ministry has a police network all around Cambodia, so we want to create social news, and we can use this resource to create the best social news in Cambodia.
For staff at the Cambodian Centre for Independent Media, who have watched as the country's free press has been largely dismantled ahead of this July's elections, the joint venture presents a worrying relationship.
So for me, it looks not good. The image of the location in the ministry, it sounds, you know, the work of the private company interferes to the works of the ministry.
Liu maintains that Nice TV is a purely commercial enterprise, but when asked about its relationship to the Chinese government, he did not want to speak on record. David Boyle for VOA News, Phnom Penh.
Meanwhile, Alibaba CEO Jack Ma says he is more interested in making the world a better place than in making money. Speaking in Bangkok Thursday, Ma said that his aim is not to beat other companies like Tencent, Baidu, Amazon, or Google, but to improve the future for everyone.
Today, talking about a competition of driverless or automobile, that is not what we want to do. What we want to do is how we can make our cars more automatic, more friendly, more like a partner of human beings rather than just a driving tool.
The leader of the Chinese e-commerce giant was in Bangkok to meet with Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha and to announce he has agreed to step up investments in the country. The two men signed an agreement to help set up a smart digital hub to facilitate trade between Thailand, China, Laos, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Ma said the agreement would not take away Thai jobs, but will help the country's development. Report said the hub, which is due to be completed next year, would also serve as a research and development center for Alibaba. This news from VOA Asia. Japanese pharmaceutical giant Takeda said it had made a takeover bid worth $60 billion for Ireland's Shire Group, but that the offer was rejected. The news comes amid a flurry of takeover and acquisition activity in the pharmaceutical industry. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Since 2000, when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave initial approval to the world's first robotic surgical system called Da Vinci, more than 4,000 of these highly sophisticated machines have been deployed in operating suites all over the world. Recognizing that the proficiency of the surgeons who use them can be subjective, a group of surgeons at the University of Southern California, in cooperation with the manufacturer Intuitive Research, is developing a system for more objective evaluation. VOA's George Pootage has the story.
First of all, let's make it clear. Robotic surgery is not performed by a robot. It's done by a highly trained surgeon.
The robot is an enabler. It's a tool where it miniaturizes the hand movements of a surgeon such that the robotic arms or instruments can reach a part of the body which otherwise could not be easily accessible by human hands.
Incisions for the four interactive robotic arms equipped with instruments and a video camera are minimal. Sitting at a nearby console, the surgeon can see inside the patient's body and move the instruments with high precision, absent the normal tremor of human hands. The surgery is less painful, loss of blood is minimal, and recovery is much faster. But training and evaluating surgeons for robotic surgery can be subjective.
If you took the same surgery and you had multiple surgeons, expert surgeons, evaluate it, you would perhaps get a different assessment with each surgeon.
Dr. Hung and his team are trying to develop an objective and sustainable method for evaluation. The system, called DV-Logger Black Box, collects data from the Da Vinci machine, which is then analyzed for four basic steps in prostatectomy, a procedure involving the prostate gland.
We clearly see that expert surgeons perform these four steps in a more efficient manner. And we also see that they have certain characteristics that are distinct from novice surgeons.
Dr. Hung points out that DV-Logger Black Box is a research tool and not in clinical use, but it helps to create a profile or view of what an experienced robotic surgeon looks like, with the ultimate goal of making patients safer. George Pootage, VOA News.
After 16 years of steady decline, malaria cases are on the rise again globally. Henry Ridgewell reports from a summit held in London where delegates urged a boost in funding for global anti-malarial programs.
Microsoft founder Bill Gates has plowed billions of dollars into tackling malaria. It has paid off. Deaths from the disease have fallen by more than 60% between 2000 and 2015. That is 7 million lives saved. But in 2016, that trend reversed, with more than 216 million cases in 91 countries, an increase of 5 million on 2015. On the sidelines of this week's London Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, Gates told delegates, including several African leaders, the fight against malaria must be stepped up.
If we don't keep innovating, we will go backwards. If we don't maintain the commitments that we're making here today, malaria would go back up and kill over a million children a year because the drugs and the insecticides always are evaded by the mosquito and the parasite.
Malaria is estimated to cost the African economies more than $12 billion per year and consumes up to 40% of national healthcare budgets. Children and pregnant women are most severely affected. The increase in cases is likely caused by a number of factors.
We're seeing quite dramatic increases in the resistance to the insecticides that we use to control the insect vector populations, and that has been really the mainstay of the gains and very remarkable gains that we've seen over the last few years. And we're just beginning to see that the parasites are starting to develop resistance to the drugs that we use to treat them.
The fight against malaria will likely get harder.
And we've gained what might be called the easier gains, and now we've got the harder ones to do, and they take even greater implementation and newer tools to allow us to look at where transmission is taking place.
Such new tools cost money, but funding has plateaued. At the Commonwealth Conference, Britain pledged more than $2 billion to fight the disease, while Bill Gates put forward another $1 billion and urged the international community to step up its efforts. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you can download our podcast and take us with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook or our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.